Nice to see you.
Nice.
Turn to somebody nearby and say you're looking pretty hot today. Now try and convince them that you really meant that. If you'd been listening to the police officer chatting on his radio that night, you'd have heard it for yourself. I was living on Darnhill Council Estate at the time in a tower block with my girlfriend on the seventh floor. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. We were smoking weed and whizzing off our heads on amphetamine, listening to house music. Actually, it was techno. My eyes were bulging out of my head and my jaw was swinging from side to side in time with the music. Then I thought I heard the door go, so I turned the music down a bit. Is that the door? The door went again. Yeah, it is. Who's that? Is that the police? No, they don't knock. Lise went to the door. It was Bob. Bob was a classic old-time drinker and drug user. You should have seen him. He wore big hobnail boots. He had a greasy ponytail and a face like a wet weasel. Come in, Bob, sit down. Bob sits in the chair in the corner next to the music equipment. I had a little home recording studio set up there. He looked at it. He said, hey, I like that lot. How does it all work? So I got up and I turned the tape off that had been playing on loop for 8 weeks. For the younger ones here, a tape is the first version of an MP3. I turned the equipment on and I started to show Bob how I played live house music. Lee says, do you want a brew and a cheese and piccalilli butty, Bob? Go on then, why not? Lee goes into the kitchen, me and Bob are talking away, and then they say, can I use your toilet? Yeah, mate, it's through that door on the left. Bob goes to the toilet, comes back, sits down, we carry on talking, and then he lifts his arm up like this, and I see my watch on his wrist. Is that my blankety blank watch? No, is it? Heck, it's mine. So I grabbed his wrist and looked. It was my watch. It had a scratch on the glass. A mate had given me this once when I got out of jail, so I knew it was mine. That is my watch. What he'd done, he'd gone to the toilet, slipped into the bedroom on the way, took my watch from my bedside cabinet and put it on his wrist. You can imagine, I went ballistic. I had a long police issue riot stick, like you do. This was leaning next to one of the speakers underneath the Bob Marley flag that was hung on the wall. I grabbed it and I laid into him. Who do you think you are? Coming into my flat. My girlfriend's making you a cheese and piccalilli butty. And you've got the cheek to go into my bedroom and take my watch from my bedside cabinet and put it on your wrist. I was going crazy. Lisa shouts, stop it, Barry, you're going to kill him. I don't care. That was my piccalilli. Eventually, I stopped. Bob rushed out of the flat, walking and limping, cuts all over his head, blood running down his face, all over the floor. 5 minutes later, the police came bursting through the door into the living room. One of them was chatting on his radio. He had a quick look round. The victim isn't here. He's gone. And then he said he's walking wounded. I got arrested and taken to the police station. The police officer said that night that Bob was walking wounded. This is the term used by the emergency services for someone who's been wounded in an incident but is still able to walk. Do you know, in a way, we are all walking wounded. I know that most of you haven't been wounded in the same way that Bob was that night. So don't you get worried. I'm not going to get out my long police issue riot stick and start lashing out. I don't do that anymore. You'd be glad to know. But I do know that we've all been wounded by those incidents that occur in life that leave us in some sort of pain. We've all been wounded in this way, haven't we? So we're all walking wounded. What can we learn from these wounds? Here are four lessons for you to take away. Number one, wounds are a legacy from the past. John Lyon Ditcher says that a legacy is anything handed down from the past. Paul in the Bible said this to a bunch of people towards the end of his life. Whatever you have learned or received or heard from me or seen in me, put into practice. This was Paul handing down his legacy. See, a legacy can be anything. It doesn't have to be something that is material like money. It can be something that is non-material. Even family sayings. My wife keeps telling me that I sound like me dad. Raise your hand if you know what I'm talking about. Do you ever say anything and sound like one of your parents or somebody that you spent a lot of time with? I do, I agree with Tina. Sometimes I'll say something and think, I sounded just like me dad then. When I finish a meal, I'll say, oh, it was lovely that. My dad used to say this when he finished a meal. Now I'm saying it, oh, it was lovely that. When I'm calling our cat over, I'll go, come on, kid. My dad used to say this to his dog, come on, kid. Now I'm saying it to our cat. A up is another one. A up, Baz. A up, now I'm saying it. Listen, my dad was born in Yorkshire. I was born in Manchester. Manx don't say A up. Don't fit, does it? Nice one, top one, sorted. Bang out of order, innit? A up. Can't be mine. See, he's handed down some of his sayings to me. A legacy is anything handed down from the past. So your wounds are a legacy from the past. You just need to realize it. In October 2016, we published a book called Fixed Lives. And it just so happens that I've got some with me today, by chance. In fact, there's some other stuff. There's a table in the corner over there. My book, Once an Addict. We started a project in 2007 when that came out to give a copy of that to every prisoner in the country. Right now, there's 84,000 prisoners behind bars in the United Kingdom. We have sent 44,000 copies of that out free of charge to prisoners. There's one small way that you can support that, just a small way. For every one copy of Once an Addict you buy, we then send two into prisons for free. So you're buying three, you're buying one, and we're sending two. So you can support that in that way. All the proceeds from the stuff that comes in from the table over there goes into the charity that I run, and it helps us do our prisons work. But Fixed Lives has got 13 life stories in it of lives that have been fixed by God. One of them is a guy called Cyril Wilding. If you could meet Cyril for yourself, you'd like him. He's got short hair, a cheeky smile, and he's one of those guys who can't do enough for you. Raise your hand if you've met someone like that. Cyril was born in Manchester, but when he was 12 years of age, he was groomed by a relative. This so-called relative and another man sexually abused Cyril non-stop for 2 years. You can imagine, this knocked him for six. His life spiraled out of control. He started to drink, take drugs, fight, commit crime. He ended up in a gang. It was in the middle of this mess when Cyril started to cut himself. At first, he would rip open a beer can with his teeth and he would use the ragged edge as a blade. And then he started to use sharp knives and he would cut himself and cut himself. You should see Cyril's arms, they're covered in wounds. Cyril got sent to prison and the wounds on his arms were so bad that they put him on suicide watch. One day, a prison visitor went to see him in his cell called Beryl. She said, Cyril, I've come to see you because I've heard that you like to cut yourself. He said, I do. She said, Cyril, do you mind if I pray with you? He said, if you want. That day in his cell, Beryl prayed with Cyril and Cyril met with God and he stopped cutting himself. Now Cyril is in his early 40s. Is married to a cracking Scottish girl called Laura, and he works at the Message Trust. I was chatting with Cyril not so long back, and I asked him what he thought about his wounds. Now, he said, I'm okay with them, really. At one point, I was going to get them covered over with tattoos, but I didn't, because I realised that my wounds are a legacy from the past. Wounds are a legacy from the past. What about you and your wounds? Have you been wounded by a family member? Have you been wounded by somebody who broke your trust? Maybe you've been wounded when you cut yourself like Cyril. Listen, whichever way it is that you've been wounded, because we're all walking wounded. We've all got wounds of some sort. You need to realize that your wounds are a legacy from the past. Today I'm talking about the walking wounded. Wounds are a legacy from the past. Number two, wounds don't dictate the future. I know for many of us here, the opposite is the case, because our wounds have dictated the future of yours. I know mine have. I was wounded again and again and again. And for years, these wounds dictated my future. If you've been around back in the day when I was a dealer in Moss Side, you'd have seen me. I was making all kinds of money, lots of money. And the more money that I made, the more drugs that I took. I was taking all the drugs that I had or I could take, and my heroin habit was massive. One night, I got arrested and put in Platt Lane Police Station. In those days, there was no treatment for people who were addicts, so you can imagine the pain that I was going through. Man, I was rattling big time. One night, I looked out of the hatch in my cell door, and I saw this little four-foot creature sat on the floor. Where did that come from? You should have seen it. It was thin, it had a flat skull, and it was wearing a white headscarf like an Arab. Here I was in a cell in so much pain and hallucinating. I was wounded. Ouch. I didn't see my mum and dad for months. By now, they knew that I was on drugs because the police were always turning up on their doorstep. One day, I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and see my mum to get some money so I can score. But when I got there, she wasn't in. My dad was. Oh, no, I didn't want to see him. He wasn't happy. He said, of all the things in the world you could have turned out to be, and you've turned out to be a blankety blank, 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 blank. He really wasn't happy. Smackhead, you're not my son anymore. He disowned me. We didn't speak for 7 years. I was wounded again. Ouch. One time, I was going out with a girl called Tanya. She didn't take drugs, so I took them behind her back. When I was going out with Tanya, all I would do was practice DJing on my Technics 1200 turntables while she was out at work. And I practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. And then one day, after lots of practice, I finally mastered the art of being able to mix in time or waka wong and in key a chuka chung every time. I was buzzing. Tanya came in from work. I said, come on, listen, Tanya. I can mix in time a waka wong and in key a chuka chung every time. She wasn't impressed. I would DJ all day and I'd be out all night. I was 9 stone. My skin was milk bottle white. You should have seen me. I looked like Smeagol from The Lord of the Rings on ecstasy. I'm not surprised in the end she sussed out I was on drugs. She didn't need to be Sherlock to work that one out. We split up. I was wounded again. Ouch. I ended up in the Pavilion Gardens in Buxton, naked, thinking that God had sent me there. I'd knocked on 11 different hotel doors. God sent me here. I need a room for the night. I didn't get a room. So I parked my car in the Pavilion Gardens car park, went for a walk, came to this river. True story. I thought, I need to walk across the river. So I took off all my clothes, stepped into the river, waded across to the other side, walked up a bank, came to a big building with a glass door. Bang, 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 bang. The light came on. A woman came walking towards me. Glass. God sent me here. I need a room for the night. You should have seen her face. She didn't open the door. Would you open the door? At 3:20 in the morning to a naked Mancunian? It looked like Smeagol on ecstasy. And then I saw that blue flashing light in the distance coming down that winding road towards me. Oh no, my clothes are on the other side of the river. So I legged it back down to the river, waded across. I couldn't find my clothes. The police pulled up. I thought, oh, I'm going to jump back into the river to get away from the police. So I found a place that looked really deep, and I stood with my back to the river, and my nose
because I'm going to jump in and get away, and I jump back. It was only an inch deep. The police came to the bank. They pulled me out. I said to one of them, God sent me here. I need a room for the night. He says, we can sort you one of them out. I got arrested, taken to the police station. I went to court. I got remanded in custody in Leicester Prison. I ended up on the hospital wing. I was wounded again. Ouch. See, I was wounded again and again and again. And for years, these wounds dictated my future. But then, after being an addict for 15 years, something unexpected happened. I met three people throughout a 10-day period. All of them were Christians. One of them invited me to church, so I turned up at church. I was sat there thinking, these guys are all basket cases. None of it made sense to me. But then the guy gets up, and at the end of his little spiel, he said, if you want to be prayed for anything, if you've got any issues, I'm thinking, is he having a laugh? Got more issues than Vogue. If you want to be prayed for anything, come to the front. I thought, what have I got to lose? So I got out of my seat and I walked to the front. All right, Rev. What can I pray for? I'm thinking, how long have you got? So I told him, I've been a heroin addict for 15 years. I'm on 55 mils of methadone. I was suffering from amphetamine psychosis. He said, okay, I'll pray with you. And he prayed for me that day. And as he prayed for me, I had a light bulb moment. Some people will call it a religious experience, but something happened to me that day. I was changed. And I stand before you today, 22 years later, still changed. You can't tell me that God isn't real. You can't tell me that God isn't alive. He's real. He's alive. And he's active. And why? You see, I couldn't have done this for me. But God has done this for me. That was when God's plan was activated in my life. And it soon became clear to me that my wounds don't dictate my future, because God's come up with a better idea. I found it in the Bible where he says there is hope for your future. So now my wounds don't dictate my future anymore. Yeah, I'm still walking wounded, because we're all walking wounded. But now my wounds do not dictate my future. What about your wounds? Have you been wounded by a bust up with a loved one? Have you been wounded by somebody who abandoned you? Have you been wounded time and time again like me? Ow. Listen, with God on your case, it doesn't matter how you've been wounded, because your wounds do not dictate your future. See, God's got a whole new future that is packed with hope, planned out for you. God's instruction, what the Bible says, that God's got a plan for you. He's got a plan to prosper you. He's got a plan not to harm you. He's got a plan to give you a hope and a future. He's got a whole new future planned out for you. It just needs to be activated. And when it is, it becomes clear that your wounds do not dictate your future. Today I'm talking about the walking wounded. Wounds are a legacy from the past. Wounds don't dictate the future. And number three, wounds are not beyond repair. The police officer said that night that Bob was walking wounded. And I know, you know, that some of you here feel a little bit like Bob. You feel like you've been hit with a long police issue right stick. You're hurt, you're in pain, you've been wounded. Listen, those wounds are not beyond repair. David in the Bible said this, speaking from experience, that God heals the brokenhearted and he bandages their wounds. See, your wounds are not beyond repair. Lisa Oyabande discovered this. Lisa's got black hair, blue eyes, and a really bubbly character. And she's married to a Nigerian guy called Deli, actually Dr. Deli. Then Lisa was a heroin addict working on the streets of Bradford. She was going out with a drug dealer. One night, she was staying at his flat. The next morning, there was somebody banging on the door. So her boyfriend went to the door, opened it. It was his ex-girlfriend. You should have seen her. She wasn't happy. She came bursting through the door into the bedroom where Lisa was lay. She's half asleep, and she starts laying into Lisa while she's in bed. Lisa jumps up, pushes her away, and she feels something damp. Oh, blood. More blood. I've been stabbed. A boyfriend's brother and boyfriend wrestled the girl to the ground. Lisa was rushed to the hospital in an ambulance. She had 70 stitches. In fact, the wounds in her chest were so bad that they had to use staples. You can imagine this vicious attack knocked her for six. She was hurt, she was in pain, she was wounded. She lived with these wounds for 8 years. And then she met some Christians. And they invited her to an event, so she went, she told me. She said, I turned up that night at church wearing my thigh-high black leather lace-up Red or Dead high-heel boots. She said, I felt really out of place. Sound familiar? Feeling out of place in church, just to me. I remember my first day in church when the guy said, right at the end, we're all going to get in a circle on Old Dan's. Old Dan's with another man? What would my dad think? First day in church. She said, even though I felt really out of place, the guy who was speaking spoke right into my situation. It was like he had read my mail. And then at the end he said, if there's anybody in this room with past hurt and past pain and you want to be prayed for, come to the front. So she got out of her seat. She went to the front. She knelt down at this little rail that was there. And this guy prayed for her. And she told me as she was knelt down, she started to cry as he prayed. The more he prayed, the more she cried. And the more she cried, the more she felt relieved. And then when he finished praying, she stood up. And she told me, when I stood up, it was like I emerged out of those tears a brand new person, because God had taken away all my hurt and all my pain. See, God heals the brokenhearted and he bandages their wounds. What God did for Lisa, he can do for you. See, 2,000 years ago, 2,000 miles away, God became a man. His name is Jesus. Jesus is God with skin on. And he came to this earth, and he was tempted just like you, but he resisted. And at the age of 33, he allowed himself to be nailed to a cross. On that day, he carried that heavy cross through town. He was wounded. On that day, they beat him with steel rods. He was wounded. On that day, they put a crown of thorns on his head. He was wounded. On that day, they hammered nails through his hands and through his feet. He was wounded. That day, Jesus, God with skin on, he became walking wounded. He died on that cross to pay the price for your faults. He died on that cross to pay the price for your flaws. He died on that cross to pay the price for your failures. He died on that cross to take away all your hurt and all your pain. See, he knows we're all walking wounded. That's why he came. And I believe right now he wants to get busy bandaging your wounds. But for some of you, you need to give him consent. You need to give him consent to come in so he can get busy. Today I'm talking about the walking wounded. Wounds are a legacy from the past. Wounds don't dictate your future. Wounds are not beyond repair. And number four, your wounds position you to walk with the wounded. The police officer said that night that Bob was walking wounded. This is the term used by the emergency services for someone who's been wounded in an incident but is still able to walk. And you know, in a major incident, when the casualties outweigh the resources, the emergency services will often use the walking wounded to assist them with others who've been wounded. You've all seen it on the TV, haven't you? When there's been a major incident of some kind. You see the carnage and the chaos on the streets, the collapsed buildings, the dust, the rubble, the overturned cars, the fires. People walking around shocked and dazed. Paramedics rushing around. And then you see the guy wearing a dirty ripped suit, tied to one side, blood running down his face, walking and limping. But he's got his arm around somebody else who's been injured. He's got his arm around his back with the guy's arm around his neck, and he's walking alongside him, carrying him to safety. See, he's walking wounded himself because he's been hurt in the same incident, but he's in a position now to help somebody else. See, his wounds have positioned him to walk with the wounded. It's the same with us.
Our wounds position us to walk with the wounded. Paul puts it this way in the Message version of the Bible. He said that God comes alongside us when we're going through it. And before you know it, he brings us alongside somebody else who's going through it. And I know. Some of you have been through it. Listen, when you've been through it, you can then help others go through it. See your wounds position you to walk with the wounded. Cyril was abused and he used to cut himself. Now he speaks to those who are being abused and those who self-harm. His wounds have positioned him. Lisa was a sex worker and she was attacked. Now every week she's at Strange Ways Prison where the girls work, reaching out to working girls, and she goes into Style Prison speaking to victims of violence. Her wounds have positioned her. I was an addict and I've been in jail. Now I facilitate a conference for addicts and I speak this year, it will be in 40 jails. See, my wounds have positioned me. I was speaking in one jail in Yorkshire. Actually, it was a Young Offenders Institute. And after I finished, this little lad came up to me. He went, "Hey, mate, you're from Manchester, innit?" I went, "Yeah, mate, I'm from Manchester, innit?" He went, "Nice one, top one, sorted, so am I, innit?" I said, "What are you doing here in Yorkshire? If you're from Manchester," he said, "they shake me out, didn't they? They bang out of all door, innit?" And then he said, "Hey, mate, thanks for coming in. It means a lot hearing it from someone like you, someone who's been through it. Makes me realise if you can come through it, I can come through it, innit?" You see, we've got on our case now. Our wounds position us to walk with the wounded. What about your wounds? How do your wounds position you? What kind of walking wounded person could you come and walk alongside? Yeah, I know you've been through it. Your wounds, though, position you to walk with the wounded, because God can take your mess and turn it into a message. He can take your negative experiences and use them in a positive way. He can take your tragedies and turn them into triumphs. None of it's wasted. I was saying that in Durham Prison 3 weeks ago to the lads. Your past isn't wasted. In God's eyes, it's valuable. See, your wounds position you to walk with the wounded. Then I'm going to finish by taking us back to my flat on Darnhill Council Estate. 2 o'clock in the morning. The door went, it was Bobby. Comes in, he sits down, he goes to the toilet, and he comes back wearing my watch on his wrist. I wasn't happy. So I grabbed my riot stick and I laid into him. Eventually, I stopped. He rushed out of the flat. The police came bursting through the door. One of them was chatting on his radio. The victim isn't here. He's gone. And then he said he's walking wounded. The walking wounded is a term used by the emergency services for someone who's been wounded in an incident but is still able to walk. Please stand. No going outside for a smoke just yet. Lee. Hey, he's doing a good job, isn't he? He's doing a good job, isn't he? Hey, man, you're doing a good job. Listen. We're all walking wounded. But there are some of us here today who are more wounded than others. Because some of you haven't given God consent to come into your life. It could be that you've been attending this church to please your friend or your partner or your mum or your dad. It could be that you've been invited today for whatever reason. It could be that you've been coming to this church and enjoying meeting people and chatting with people, but you've never given God consent to come in. I was speaking in Macclesfield. I go to all these glamorous places. I've got a friend called Jay John. He was in Hawaii. I was in Macclesfield. That's not fair. And after I finished speaking, I was over at the table at the back chatting with people, and this guy came up to me and says, "Mate, I've been coming to this church for over a year. Nobody's ever told me that I need to give God consent to come in. It's never been clear to me that I needed to do that until today. And what you said today really resonates with me, and I've prayed that prayer. I've given God consent to come in, and something's changed." That could be you.
It could be that you've been coming to this church, but you've never given God consent to come in. Pray this prayer, give God consent to come in and see what happens. So there's two groups of people going to pray this prayer. The first group of those people who have never prayed a prayer, who have never given God consent to come into your life. You're going to park your pride outside. You're going to pray this prayer. You're going to give him consent to come in. The second group of people are those people, you have prayed a prayer. You've started your Christian journey at some point, but you know right now you're not cutting it. It's okay. The Bible says there's no condemnation for you. That's okay. But you need to pray this prayer and get back on track. Reconnect. But you need to give God consent to come in so you can reconnect. I remember being on my side once. I went to score some drugs. I pulled up in my car and this black guy pulled a knife on me and he forced his way into my car and he says, I want you to take me to Wally Range. I had no choice. God will never do that with you. He'll never force his way into your life. He'll only ever come in if you give him consent. So I'm going to pray a prayer. The first group of people are those people who've never prayed a prayer before. You've never given God consent to come in and you pray this prayer. The second group are those people who have prayed a prayer. You're going to pray this to reconnect if you need to. Everybody else, you make up the third group. You're going to pray to encourage the first group and the second group. Are we ready? Yes. Let's bow our heads and let's pray this prayer out loud. This is between you and God, nobody else. I'm just leading you in this prayer. I'm going to pray it phrase by phrase. After each phrase, I'm leaving a space. That space is for you to repeat the praise. Whether you're 9, 19 or 99, if you're old enough to understand what I'm saying to you, then you can pray this prayer and you can start your journey or you can reconnect now. Are we ready? Repeat after me. Dear God, I come to you today and I admit that I'm not perfect. God, I ask that you forgive me for all my faults, for all my flaws, and for all my failures. God, I ask that you wipe my slate clean because right now I'm giving you consent to come in and I'm asking you to come and walk alongside me to get busy bandaging my wounds. While our heads are bowed, no looking around. If you've prayed that prayer, you're part of the first group or the second group. I want you to raise your hand so I can see it very quickly. Go on, keep your hands raised, keep your hands raised, keep your hands raised. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. Put your hands down. There might be a few more of you. 13 people, raise your hands already. You don't need to raise them again. I'm going to count down 5 seconds. That 5 seconds is just to give those of you who haven't raised your hands that little extra opportunity just to say, I've prayed that prayer, I'm part of the first group or the second group. But it's not always easy. There's a reason why we do this. So if you've raised your hands already, keep them down. 13 of you, keep your hands down. The rest of you who's prayed that prayer, you're part of the first group or the second group. As I count down 5 seconds, just raise your hand so I can see it. Anybody else prayed that prayer? 5. Another one over here. Thank you. Anybody else prayed that prayer? 4. Another one at the back. That's 2. Anybody else prayed that prayer? You're part of the first group or the second group. As I count down, 3. Anybody else prayed that prayer? 2. Anybody else? 1. I'm going to count to 3. 16 people have prayed that prayer and you've raised your hand. On the point of 3, not just yet, I'm going to go 1, 2, 3. On the point of 3, you're going to leave your seat. You're going to walk through the back door into the lounge area at the side because Leah's got some things that we've brought with us from the trust down here. We've got a booklet we want to give you and a DVD that's called What's Next? What do you do next after praying that prayer? Well, the DVD, I explain what you need to do next. The booklet explains a lot more information as well. And someone from the church is going to come and stand with you. So whether you're part of the first group or the second group, all those people, there are 16 of you, raise your hand, you're going to leave your seat, you're going to go through the back door, someone's going to come with you from the church, they're going to take you to the lounge, they're going to give you the DVD, the What's Next, chat with you for a couple of minutes. Okay, are you ready? So 1, 2, 3. You go now as quickly as you can. Let's give them a round of applause if they... Thank you. You go now as quickly as you can. Thank you.